Let us turn to Psalm 55. Psalm 55. It is believed that this psalm was written by David at the time of Absalom's rebellion, hence the mention of enemies and danger. And the verses there from verse 12 about the one who reproached him and magnified himself against David, the man who was his equal, his guide, his acquaintance, who took sweet counsel together and walked unto the house of God in company. That's thought to be Ahithophel, David's favourite counsellor and close friend during better times. But Ahithophel turned against David and sided with Absalom and the rebels. And it was a bitter blow and a grievous thing to feel so betrayed. And of course David is a type of our Lord. Ahithophel is a type of Judas who betrayed our blessed Lord. But let's just read two verses of this psalm. First of all, Psalm 6. And I said, "Oh, that I had wings like a dove, for then would I fly away and be at rest." This is what David felt like doing, to escape from all his troubles. Then verse 22. "Cast thy burden upon the Lord, and he shall sustain thee. He shall never suffer the righteous to be moved." This is what David says he must do. Go to the Lord with his troubles and find relief there. And this second, of course, is the right one always, isn't it? Not escapism, flying far away like a dove, but godliness in drawing near to God. And you notice that David in verse 22 urges himself to do this. "Cast thy burden upon the Lord, and he shall sustain thee. He shall never suffer the righteous to be moved." He's talking to himself. And we do need to do that sometimes. We need to remind ourselves of what we believe and what we know and what we should do. Spurgeon says, "Some of the best talks a man has are with himself." And this is certainly true in the godly life. And you'll notice, in addition, that there is a confidence about this, isn't there? "Cast thy burden upon the Lord, and he shall sustain thee. He shall never suffer the righteous to be moved." And you get the impression that David has done this in the past many times, proved the truth of it, and now urges himself, reminds himself to do it again. And how many times we do need to do this kind of thing, don't we? Again and again and again, because fresh troubles, but ever one resort. "Casting our burden upon the Lord, and he shall sustain and never suffer us to be moved." And not only David has proved this, but countless saints since. So good it is that the Apostle Peter takes it up, doesn't he, in 1 Peter 5 and verse 7, and he gives an apostolic cast to it, "Casting all thy care upon him, and he careth for you." Well, let us look at these words and see how David expresses them here, the right and only course in every time of need. Let's look at the burden itself, first of all. Thy burden. It's a picture, isn't it? A metaphor. To stand for anything that gets on top of us and proves too much to bear. A real weight. And there are various kinds, and not all of them are necessarily adverse. We could think about our service for the Lord, and anything that we do for God is a heavy responsibility because we're handling holy and divine things that will have eternal repercussions. Anything to do with the spread of the gospel, to the support of the ministry, teaching little ones or our own children, it's a burden. Three times in the prophet says, the burden of the word of the Lord. It's a heavy weight, heavy responsibility, and not to be trifled with, as we heard last Lord's Day morning, trembling at the word. And to this man will I look, says God. And it's a word for preachers too, isn't it? Spurgeon once said, let those preach lightly who dare do so. To me it is the burden of the Lord, joyfully carried as grace is given, but still a burden which at times crushes my whole manhood into the dust of humiliation. Service for the Lord, a real burden, carried and borne, and a great honour and a privilege. But there is the burden of severe trial. It might be burdens in the family that we live with. It might be a financial burden in this current climate. It might be the burden of a responsible and demanding job. It might be the burden of discouragement and depression. And these things are heavy and weigh down, hard to bear. And we become weary of it. It can be so severe that it can even show outwardly. Makes us stoop a little. Slows us up. Shows on our face. And someone might say, you know, you look as if you've got the whole world weighing on your shoulders. And of course, we should not be blind to this kind of thing in others. The scripture says in Galatians 6 verse 2, bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ, who said, love one another. But the fact is, even if we do try to bear one another's burdens, there's only so much any of us can do. And every little bit is appreciated, but it's limited, isn't it? We need another, infinitely greater, to go to. There is also the burden that comes perhaps in our physical bodies. In 2 Corinthians 5 verse 4, the apostle likens the human body to a tent, a tabernacle, which is a thin, fragile thing and only pitched temporarily in the world. It's not a permanent building with a foundation. And he says, we that are in this tabernacle do groan, being burdened. And ill health is a real burden, isn't it? The advance of years, old age, which doesn't come alone, is a burden. And elderly Christians bear it so nobly, but it is a burden. And it's good for younger Christians to have fellowship with older Christians to appreciate that it's not easy to carry the weight of advanced years and the attendant weaknesses and pain, tiredness that comes with them. And in a society which tends to idolize youth and almost despise the aged, or at least put them out the way. And yet in the Christian church, the lovely thing is that young and old together fellowship, and the young appreciate that one day they'll be old and they'll need the same grace, the same help. And it's a very lovely thing. In the body as well, service for the Lord and severe trial and the burdens of old age in the body, and many other burdens as well. But let's move secondly to this. The burden rightly viewed. Thy burden. It's interesting that that word burden is not the usual word for it. And it only occurs here. And if you have a margin Bible, you'll see that it can be rendered alternatively as gift. It's not the usual word for burden. It's not even the usual word for gift. But it means something that it can either mean a burden or a gift. And therefore, you get the idea that there is an origin to this, to every burden that the Lord's people carry. Literally, it can mean what is allotted, what is given. And so you see, burdens in life are appointed by the Lord and are providential gifts. What a light to see it in, isn't it? Strictly vertical this is. How many non-Christians would see it like that? Not any, I suppose. Just a thing that has happened, one of those things that you've got to live with and make the best of. Ah, but not David, you see. Thy burden, thy gift, God's loving and all-wise gift that is entrusted to us, whatever it is, however heavy it might prove, its origin is from the Lord. That's how it is rightly viewed. And that's important, isn't it, to see it like that. Have a godly, God-centered view of every burden in life. Not one of them can give itself a birth. Not one of them can just happen on its own. And even where there are people involved and circumstances, the devil himself, yet overall, it's God's entrusting something to us, heavy and difficult though it might be. Thy burden, thy gift. And that means, dear friends, it must be good for us, mustn't it? Because follow this metaphor. Something that's heavy, a weight. This is the picture. Now, what does it do for us? If God sanctifies it to us and makes it a blessing, what will it do to us? One thing it will do is it will lower us. The weight will bring us down and lower us. Like a boat in the water, if it's empty, it will ride high in the water, but it might well easily capsize. But you put ballast in it, you put weight in it, and it sinks down in the water, and then it's steady and is much safer. And dear friends, the Lord knows how proud and self-important we would be if we didn't have that particular burden that he has given us. We would be riding high. We'd be self-confident. We would be full of ourselves. We would trust ourselves, and who knows what terrible capsizing, even shipwreck we might make. Thy burden. It's a good thing to carry something that presses us and keeps us low. Low before God, in trust and in prayer and in acknowledging him. We might think we could wish to be rid of that particular thing. If it were good for you to be rid of it, God would not have given it to you. If you have it, it must be for a reason. Humility is certainly one reason. Another aspect is that it adds weight to us. And it makes us serious. And sometimes we need that, don't we? Because we are very prone to be light and flippant when it comes to the things of God. And if everything's going well and no problems and everything's going swimmingly, we can forget the seriousness of the things we believe and what we stand for and where we are going and what we are doing as Christians, and we can get careless and silly. And so there's a weightiness and a seriousness that comes on our spirits when we carry a burden. It keeps us right and stops us being foolish, whereas otherwise we certainly might be. I don't know about you, I know my own heart, and I know that the times when I've got something heavy to think about, something pressing, it does make me more prayerful and more diligent and keeps me right as a Christian. God knows, he's very wise and kind in these things. Another thing it could do is this, that in this weight on us, it can steady us so that we become more established in good habits of devotion and diligence and faithfulness. We could be easily moved and unstable and hit and miss and a little bit erratic. I tell you, when you're carrying a burden, you need your quiet time. You need the scriptures. You need prayer. You need the Lord's people. You need the means of grace. You need the Lord himself. And we're kept right. The Lord does what is wise and good for us. We would not be half so spiritual if we were half so burdened. Thy burden, thy gift. And you see, it's called thy burden. David acknowledges that this is the one for him. The rebellion of his own son, rising up, leading a crowd of conspirators to take over the kingdom. And David and his loyal men having to flee Jerusalem because Absalom might kill his father and all who are loyal to the king. What a burden to carry. And then the loss of Ahithophel, the chief and trusted counselor who's gone over to Absalom's side, a traitor. That's a double burden. Thy burden, he says to himself. Well, it's very real. But David's burden won't be another's burden. And my burden, maybe not your burden. It's not your burden and yours is not mine. We have each our own burden, as God individually has gifted us with it for our good. And dear friends, it's a real test, isn't it? The test is this: what are we going to do with it? What are we going to do about it? Do we feel, oh, to get away from it all? Oh, to be relieved, released, delivered from this thing, to go somewhere else, to be in another place. Verse 6, wings like a dove, then would I fly away and be at rest. I would wander far off and remain in the wilderness. Well, sometimes we feel driven to thinking like that, don't we? But escapism is never any solution for a Christian. Verse 22 is, cast thy burden upon the Lord, and so on. Well, let's look thirdly then at the burden relieved. What does this mean? Cast thy burden upon the Lord, and he shall sustain thee. He shall never suffer the righteous to be moved. It's an interesting thing as to what this actually means in experience. Does it mean that you can get rid of your burden by giving it to the Lord so that it's no longer yours? As a line of a hymn puts it, I'll cast my burden at his feet and take a song away. Does it mean that you're free of it because you've given it away to God? As is sometimes perhaps thought, and maybe sometimes the impression given. Well, it does not seem so, does it, from the language here? Cast thy burden upon the Lord, he shall sustain thee. He'll not suffer you to be moved. You don't hand over the burden itself to God because he's given it to us and he doesn't want it back. No, he shall sustain thee, not take it away. Does it not mean this, rather, to cast the weight of your burden upon him so that it is never too much for you to bear? And you get relief, you're sustained under it, and you're not moved. You still bear it, it's still in your life, but you are being wonderfully helped. It's never crushing and too much for you. How do you do it? Well, by prayer. Psalm 62 and verse 8. Trust in him at all times, ye people. Pour out your heart before him. God is a refuge for us. In other words, tell him all about it. Unload it all upon him in terms of sharing with him how you feel about the burden, what it's doing to you, and your fears and your sufferings concerning it. Tell him like that, a burden shared is a burden halved, certainly more than halved when you tell God all about it. And there is a relief in that. There is a being sustained, isn't there? The thing itself doesn't go away, but you are changed for the better. Now, someone might say, I do this. I do pray about it. And I do get some relief. But then I begin thinking about it again. And before long, it fills my mind and the burden seems to come back in all its weight. And I'm no better off than before. I wish I could just so pray about it and then that would be the end of it. And then I would be free of it in the sense that I'm being so marvellously helped, but I can't seem to get the effectual relief. What do you do? Having prayed about it, and then by the end of the day, it's just as bad as ever. Well, isn't there a spiritual psychology in this? Pray about it again. And every time the thing comes to your mind, give it to God. Cast it upon him. And when it comes back, cast it upon him again by prayer. Why is it coming back? Why is it assuming the same weight as it was before? Because of the devil, isn't it? He is reminding you of it. He's bringing it in front of you. And he's weighing it down upon your spirit, who loves to torment us in this way. Well, pray again and go to the Lord with it in your mind, instantly, mentally, there and then. Tell the Lord, give it to him in prayer again and again and again. And I'll tell you what, if you keep praying, every time the devil brings it back to you, he'll eventually give up. Because it will dawn on him that all he's doing in bringing it back to your mind is sending you to the Lord in prayer. And that's the last thing he wants to do. And so it'll get to a point where the devil realizes that in tormenting you over this burden, all it's doing is sending you to the Lord in prayer. And finally, he'll stop. And you'll get peace. That's what Hannah did, it would seem. One more time, when she went to the temple of the Lord, and in 1 Samuel 1 verse 15, she was a woman of a sorrowful spirit. She was so screwed up by her domestic situation, this Peninnah, this other wife taunting her, because Peninnah could have children, Hannah couldn't, but Elkanah loved Hannah more than Peninnah, and it had tortured her, and she prayed about it probably before this, but finally she won through, and dear Eli said, "Go in peace, the Lord grant thee thy petition." And we read verse 18 of 1 Samuel 1. She went her way and her countenance was no more sad. Nothing was changed. And yet everything was changed because she was changed. And you see, the devil had given up. And she got peace. She'd cast her burden upon the Lord. And she was sustained, and she was not moved. And don't think that it was the arrival of Samuel that did it. That was the sequel. But this happened before Samuel was born, who was God's solution to her intractable problem. She won through by praying and praying and praying, and finally the devil fled from her, because she was resisting the devil as she was praying. And the devil gave up. And she had peace. From being a sorrowful spirit to being a woman who was no more sad. It's a blessed thing when you get the victory in that way. By prayer. And by trust. See it as something that really, having prayed to the Lord about, it's mainly on the Lord now rather than you. Casting all your care on Him, for He careth for you, and He's carrying it with you. He shall sustain thee under it, because He bears it with you. And you can depend upon it, He bears the heaviest part and enables you to live with that thing. Was that not the case with Saul, or Paul rather, the Apostle Paul in 2 Corinthians 12? The thorn in the flesh, that was a piercing and painful providence, whatever it was. And the Lord wasn't pleased to remove it from him, even though Paul prayed for 3 times that it might be. But then the Lord said, "My grace is sufficient for thee. My strength is made perfect in weakness." Isn't it the same as saying, "You've cast this upon me, I'm not going to take it away, but I'm going to give you grace to bear it, and I'm going to sustain you under it. And out of your weakness, I'll make you strong." And wasn't that 14 years later in 2 Corinthians 12? I knew a man 14 years ago, meaning himself. So for 14 years, the Lord has sustained him. And he wasn't moved. And he had all the blessings of that burden. And none of the harm. Trust him. And he'll help you to bear it. Spurgeon has a delightful little illustration that seems to make this clear. Preaching in 1886, he says, "Here is a dear little child that has but a little load to carry, yet he staggers under it. It would be a kind thing for his father to pick up the child and his load too, and carry both him and his burden. But the wise father says, 'I will so provide for that child that he shall grow in strength and at last be able to carry his load.'" In another sermon he says, God will either make the burden lighter or the back stronger. But either way, we shall be sustained. And it's poignant concerning Spurgeon because the last sermon he preached in 1891, it's as if he looks back over his own life and his years in the ministry, his battle for the truth in the downgrade that undoubtedly shortened his life, and he died at age 57 at the the end of January 1892. But he says this in the last sermon he preached: the heaviest end of the cross lies ever on his shoulders. Get that? It lies on ours as a burden, but the heaviest end lies on his shoulders. That actually comes from Samuel Rutherford, one of his letters. And Samuel Rutherford says, the heaviest end of the cross lies on his shoulders. And he says, oh, blessed second that suffereth with you. But anyway, Spurgeon quotes it here. And he says, if he bids us carry a burden, he carries it also. If there is anything that is gracious, generous, kind and tender, yea, lavish and superabundant in love, you always find it in him. His service is life, peace, joy. It's quite something to preach, isn't it? A man broken in health, and a man worn out, and a man who won't live much longer in this world. But you see, the Lord carried him, carried the burden along with him, and sustained him, and Spurgeon was not moved. That word sustain there is the same word as is used in Nehemiah 9 and verse 21, where it's the record of the Israelites through the wilderness, those 40 years. And this is how it's put in Nehemiah 9 as it's confessed in prayer. Yea, 40 years didst thou sustain them in the wilderness, so that they lacked nothing. Several million people, men, women, children, journeying through inhospitable environment toward the promised land, 40 years. God provided their food, their water, defense from enemies, all the guidance, all the comfort of his love, sustained in the wilderness, carrying the burden of that long journey, and sometimes the discouragement and the perplexity and the weariness and the difficulties of the way. But they were sustained. They lacked nothing. And that God is the same God today. This God is our God forever and ever. He shall sustain thee and will be kept safe and steady. He will never suffer the righteous to be moved. You know, this is better than escapism. The trouble with escapism is that you've got to come back to it, haven't you? You can never get fully and finally away from any of life's situations that you might wish to get away from. We return to it and have to face it still. But here, escaping into the Lord's embrace, we find that we are bearing our burden and yet not bearing it. Because the Lord's sufficiency is helping us through to his own great glory and our immeasurable good. And we find, dear friends, that these gifts and blessings of burdens, each and every one, they do not come alone, they come with the Lord. and they come with his promised relief and upholding. And he shall never suffer the righteous to be moved. May God bless this truth to us in our experience. And may we be as the man after God's own heart and find God's own heart toward us. Amen. Amen. Let us sing together hymn number 798.